In a world that appears to be filled with negativity and distrust, it's easy to feel helpless and frustrated. Well, how about a change? How about a podcast that brings positivity to your day with stories about everyday people doing good things for people around them? You found it here. This is the Harmony Goal Podcast with Tom Durth, focused on making the world a more harmonious and caring place. We hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to another episode of the Harmony Goal Podcast. And for those of you who have been following us, know that our podcast is designed specifically to shine the spotlight on those people and organizations that are out there unselfishly helping the world become a better place. And Lord knows we need that today. And today our guest is Tamara Ryan, and she is the CEO of the Women's Bean Project, and that's going to be our topic of discussion today. But I want to tell you a little bit about Tamara, and Tamara must have a room dedicated in her house for awards. Wait till you hear this. Hang on, folks. Tamara is not only the CEO of the Women's Bean Project, but she's also what the Bean Project is, a social enterprise providing transitional employment in its food manufacturing business to women attempting to break the cycle of unemployment and poverty. Named the most influential CEO and 10 most influential women in business in 2023, Tamara is a former partner and board member for Social Venture Partners Denver and Social Enterprise Alliance. In fact, Congressman Mike Kaufman recognized Tamara's servant leadership and entered it into the congressional record of the 115th Congress. She was honored by the Colorado Women's Chamber of Commerce as one of the top 25 most powerful women in Colorado, and in 2022-23 as a Titan 100 CEO and Social Entrepreneur of the Year by the Colorado Institute for Social Impact. She was a presenter at TED Mile High and is a highly sought-after speaker on the topics such as compassionate leadership and social enterprise. I'm almost exhausted already, and this next part, just anybody who has authored a book knows that Tamara is a very organized person, obviously. So Tamara is the author of The Third Law, a book which highlights the social obstacles and internal demons that must be overcome for marginalized women to change their lives. The Third Law has already won 8 awards for women, minorities, and business and social activism. She is currently working on her second book. I'm getting even more tired now. The new book is Followship: How to Be a Leader Worth Following. Tamara received her undergraduate degree from University of Colorado in Boulder and her Master's of Arts and Sciences from Adelphi University. She lives in Denver, Colorado with her husband, 2 teenagers, and 2 golden doodles. Tamara, welcome and thank you so much. You are one of the busiest people I know, and we really appreciate you taking the time to be here with us today.
Thanks so much, Tom. It's great to be here.
Well, good. So Tamara, the Women's Bean Project is what we really want folks to know about here, because this is an amazing organization. Tell us a little bit about what the Women's Bean Project is and how did it go about getting started?
Well, I'll start by saying that we believe that all women have the power to transform their lives through employment. We were founded in 1989, so sometimes we think of ourselves as the OG of employment social enterprise, because we were founded before it even had a name. Our founder was volunteering at a daytime homeless shelter for women and kids, and she was doing that as part of her earning her master's in social work degree. She was there for a whole school year, and what she saw was that women would come in and use the services of the shelter, and it would keep them safe, and then they'd leave because they'd get a job. Because she was there for so long, she saw the same women coming back over and over again. And she thought, you know, if I could teach the women not just how to get the job, but to keep it, the basics of job readiness, that would really be the cure for poverty. She invested $500 of her own money and bought beans because she noticed that a lot of her friends were eating bean soup for health reasons. And she put two women to work making 10 bean soup. That was our original product in 1989. From that $500 investment, they made $6,100 in sales. Gosh, wouldn't it be great to have that kind of ROI on all of our investments? And that was sort of the beginning of like, oh, maybe this could be something. And that was really the genesis of Women's Bean Project.
That's amazing. So she just started producing and hiring women to help her out with the project.
Yeah. Well, and today, you know, we're from that $500 investment and that $6,100, we're about a $3.1 million operation. And we have now 50 different food products that we distribute all across the U.S. in about 1,000 stores and through many, many online relationships. So we're really, you know, what I'm proud of, though, is that at our core, we are still about helping women move from chronic unemployment to a life where they can sustain themselves and their families.
So what's unique about the Women's Bean Project? Because here you are, you have a product, you're making the product, the women come in, they work there. How is this unique from any other employment type of environment?
Well, we really are two businesses. We are a food manufacturer and mm-hmm. we are a human services organization, all both under one roof. Mm-hmm. So we hire women for a full-time job. So in that respect, it's just like any other job. Mm-hmm. Yet 70% of her paid time is going to be spent working in the business, just like any job. In that case, we're working on job readiness skills. We're working on the habit of coming to work every day and on time and taking direction and paying attention to detail. 30% of her pay time, though, is spent in program activities where so we think of it as the bean job, the 70%, and the you job, the YOU job, where she's working on herself. And in that time where she's working on herself, we start out by overcoming the personal obstacles that often look like not having stable housing, perhaps not having stable childcare if she has young children, not having a strong platform for sobriety. So we work on all those really basic needs. And then on that foundation, we build other skills, problem solving, goal setting, planning and organizing, budgeting, computer skills. So we're really trying to address the whole person, because the reality is, even when employers don't like to hear this, people bring their whole selves to work.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're really trying to help her be is a better employee for the next place she goes. Each woman only works for us for 6 to 9 months. We are what's called a transitional employer. So she leaves us at some point by design. It is a time limited opportunity for her. And she leaves us and goes and becomes somebody else's great employee. We want to make sure that she really has a toolbox of skills that she takes to that next employer and is a great employee for them. When she is a great employee, then she's supporting herself and her family. She's making a contribution to our community because her income is being put back into the economy through the purchase of goods and services. And so when you think about one person and all the ripple that can happen as a result of her having a better life, I think that's really what, you know, why it matters, and perhaps a bit of why we're different from any other business.
That is amazing. So instead of like Dolly Parton screaming and hollering about 9 to 5, your 9 to 5 for them is not just go in and work, 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 work. You have formalized training that allows them to understand and learn the basic skills they need to get and maintain a job. Is that correct?
Yes. And I think the most important part of that is that she's paid for that time. So she's paid the same whether she's working on the production line producing bean soup mix or brownie mix as she is when she's sitting in a computer class building a skill that she's going to take with her. And I think that is really one of the most distinctive things that, you know, not very many employers could afford, honestly, to use 30% of someone's paid time to work on themselves.
That is amazing. I've seen that happen at the higher levels where management gets that kind of extra training. But to have somebody who's a production line worker be given that opportunity to grow their personal skill set so that they are employable and have a sense of dignity again.
Well, and I think that's often what we don't think about if we're accustomed to being employed, is that there is dignity that comes from a job that doesn't exist when you're receiving government benefits. Mm. And the research shows that kids understand the difference between those two kinds of checks also. So the dignity of work, I think, is a really important thing for us as a community to pay attention to, that when someone earns their own way, when there is a meal on the table that they paid for with their paycheck, or the shoes on their kids' feet are shoes that they bought with the money they've earned, that is a very different feeling than someone receiving only government benefits and only being able to support themselves through that. That government benefits can be very appropriate and very helpful. And long term, people want to earn their own way.
This is that level of dignity that you're allowing people to accept into their lives is something I don't know how you could buy that anywhere, and yet you're giving that to these people. Just the fact that you said that these people are getting paid while they're in training doubles the impact of the power of what you're doing there. That is just absolutely beautiful.
Well, I hope so. And I also, I think of it as a toolbox. And so a woman comes here and she might have some tools in her toolbox. And I would say that every woman has maybe a different complement of tools. Mm-hmm. We really work hard to meet each woman where she is when she comes to us. We might have one woman with a third grade reading level who dropped out of school in middle school. We might have someone else who has done a college degree or completed a college degree. And so it's really important for us to work with each woman to help her overcome her barriers to employment. Often there are overlaps between those barriers, but work with her to fill her toolbox with the tools that she needs. Tom, honestly, I go to work every day thinking about how we can provide services that are so effective and far-reaching that every woman who comes to us is the last in her family to need us. Because wouldn't it be awesome if we run out of chronically unemployed women in Denver and we have to do something crazy like hire men?
I'll be first in line. I want some of that training. I want some of that training. That is beautiful. What specifically do you help them with in the training for finding and maintaining a job? Because, I mean, here they are. You're giving them a phenomenal comfort zone, and yet they're going to go out there into the cruel world that doesn't understand what you're helping them with.
It starts with every woman understanding what a work environment expectations are. It means that the expectation at every employer is going to be that you come to work on time and you come to work every day or as close to every day as possible. You pay attention to detail, you communicate with your supervisor, some really basic skills that are about job readiness. And so we start with this curriculum that's about building job readiness. And we assess that at the end as she's leaving to make sure she is ready. And so as she's working on herself, we start to prepare her for what she wants her career entry-level job to be. We do some assessments. One in particular is called Career Scope, which is basically an assessment of both interest and aptitude, and it creates a list of possible jobs for every woman. And what I love about that is that by the time somebody comes to the BEAM project, she's been told all the things she cannot do, but very few people sit down with her and talk about possibilities. And Career Scope is one tool that we use to help outline possibilities. And usually it's at least a page, if not more, of just different kinds of jobs, many of which I didn't even know exist, but it's really fun to see these lists of jobs. And it starts to talk to her about what kind of job makes sense for her. I think when you find the job that's meant for you, it's going to be sticky. That's how I think about it. When she leaves us, I want that job to be sticky. And so in as part of where she wants to go next, we're then also helping her develop a resume and a cover letter and a tool we call a letter of explanation. That's really about where she's been. It's not something she necessarily shares, but it's something she prepares so that she can talk about where she's been and why now is different. Why is now the time that she's going to be a great employee for this next employer? She's going to have practice doing interviewing, and she's going to learn how to look for a job. She's going to learn how to apply for those jobs. So all of those things combined really build her at least job search toolbox. What I want to make sure is that when she leaves us, she has the ability to look for a job again and again and again. Because that job she goes to once she finishes with us might not be the job she keeps forever. But I sure want her to be able to then find the next job and a better job and be able to keep moving up. And that's why we think about it as a career entry level job. And by definition, entry level means that there is an opportunity for advancement. And we want to teach her how to discern what is a good job and what is not a good job.
Unlike most other employers, your business model is so opposite in that most employers get somebody, they invest the time to train them on a job, and they don't want them to go anywhere else because the fact that they would have to retrain somebody else. Your business is constantly training people on the job and how to get the next job. That's a business model that you just don't hear about very often.
It is, I often say it's a horrible way to run a business, right? Because we hire women, you know, by design, we're hiring women. We may not know initially, especially that she's going to come to work every day. Mm-hmm. And so we're working with her to overcome her barriers. And then we continue to work with her. She becomes a great employee. And then we let her go. We let her go off and become somebody else's great employee. It's a terribly inefficient way. And yet, how awesome. One of the things I love the most about the work that we do is I get to meet the women on their first day when maybe they're not quite sure what's going to happen. And maybe they're not even sure that this is the right place for them. And then over a period of a pretty short amount of time, I mean, 6 to 9 months isn't that long. They literally blossom into these amazing people. And how great, you know, how lucky are we if we have in our lifetime an opportunity to witness that kind of transformation?
Oh, that just is, like I say, the business model is so different and it is so effective. It's beautiful that somebody didn't think about this sooner. You mentioned something earlier about it's a 6 to 9 month program. What's the difference between somebody being with you for 6 versus 9 months?
The first 6 months, the first month is what we call stabilization, where we're really focused in on the basic needs that would get in the way of her not being able to keep employment with us or anyone else. Mm-hmm. So in the first couple of days after she's hired, we do a basic needs assessment and we identify all the things that we need to focus on right away. And that could be health issues or housing or transportation. Every woman gets an eco pass as a part of their employment with us. So that takes care of transportation right away. Maybe she needs help securing childcare. You know, so we're focused on all those things that we know right away gonna get in the way of her coming to work. And then she moves into the sort of meat and potatoes of the program where she's working on the production floor and she's also building her skills for herself. That goes until 6 months. And at that point, they start their transition out. And that transition out maybe could last a month if she finds a job right away. And it could also last 3 months. What we've learned, though, is that we need to start with the end in mind. That's something I say all the time about mm-hmm. everything. Mm-hmm. That we've found that if we are not real clear that her time with us will not exceed 9 months, that then we've learned that often a woman will self-sabotage when she's starting her job search. If she thinks maybe the next job will pay more, but this is a really safe and I like working at Women's Bean Project. So we really try to, you know, we set an end date and we say at 6 months, you're going to start looking and start your transition out, and it will not exceed 9 months.
Wow, that's beautiful. Once again, beautiful business model that you've created there. That's beautiful. The you have these products. Now, this is what's going to keep these women paid, is to have the products out there. How do you market your products? Do you go to grocery stores? Is it online? How do you go about getting your products out there to the consumer?
We have a pretty wide variety of sales channels. So we are currently in all the King Supers and City Market stores in the state, mm-hmm. and all the Safeway stores, and in all the Whole Foods in the region. The Rocky Mountain region, mm-hmm. And I should say state of Colorado, in case you have listeners who are outside of Colorado. Mm-hmm. That's a big part of our reach to consumers. We have our own website. It's womensbeanproject.com. And that's about 40% of our sales. So I would always encourage people to come to our website, because that's where you can see all of our products in one place. Mm-hmm. And then we're in about 1,000 stores across the U.S. So there are lots of places people can buy our products. And we also, one sales channel that is growing pretty rapidly is gift giving sites, or wholesale, at least for us, wholesale consumer sites, where people will go if they want to buy a gift that has meaning. And so that kind of online relationship for us is growing pretty rapidly. So mm-hmm. a lot of our work is, I feel like it's better if we have lots of people outselling for us. I think of it like Minions, where we have lots and lots of people outselling on our behalf. That's mm-hmm. going to be great for us if we have people representing us. We also have really built our marketing on this idea of if you love us, pass it on. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, bean soup's not sexy by any means. However, we're often given as a gift. And so, you know, we're pretty lucky in that we have people who have been supporters of ours for a long time and who think, oh, I know who would really like this organization and this yummy bean soup mix. I'm going to send it to, you know, my friend who's in upstate New York. And then that person gets our product and then they pass it on. And, it, you know, so it's much, we've really built our organization on a viral marketing strategy. Of mm-hmm. course, we have, you know, lots of social media presence and things like that. But we really do rely on other people to spread the word for us.
Are all your products food products, or do you have any other products besides
well,
food?
Of course, we have the obligatory, you know, Women's Bean Project hat. Uh-huh. And, you know, so we do have some non-food items that are more branded mm-hmm. items. But at our core, we are a dry food manufacturer.
Got it. Very good. Excellent. So you have these participants that come in here. Do you find them or do they find you? Or is there a combination of both?
We build relationships with organizations around the community who will refer women who fit the criteria we're looking for. Mm-hmm. And so they often will refer. I would say our number one referral source, though, is someone else who's been in the program. Okay. And some of that is a reflection of intergenerational poverty. So we might have a woman and her cousin and her aunt and her sister, because often the challenges of being chronically unemployed, potentially being formally incarcerated, it happens for multiple people in the same family. So that's really how a lot of the women come to us. That said, we have relationships with the Department of Corrections and parole officers and treatment programs. And so we've now reached the point where we are post-pandemic. We brought on 15 new women at the beginning of September. For those 15 spots, we had 130 applicants. So it gives you some sense of need relative to how many we can hire.
Okay, I'm putting myself into a dangerous area by asking this question, because I want to find out, do you have any studies about recidivism? That's what I was worried about, is saying that word right.
Recidivism.
Yeah.
Yeah, so recidivism information is surprisingly challenging to get from the state. So what we try to look for is proxies for that. So we follow up with our graduates at 6, 12, 18, and 24 months after they complete the program. And we do it for a number of reasons, not the least of which is that we really want to understand if what we've done is effective, if it really has helped her keep a job. We find that at 1 year, 95 to 100% of women are still employed. And so we know if she's still employed at 1 year, she hasn't gone back to prison. And so that's one way that we can measure it. We, interestingly, and this is sort of what happens in our world, nonprofit world, when you get really good at measuring one thing, then it's almost like the carrot moves farther away. So we got really great at measuring 1 year out. And then people started asking us, well, what about 2 years? So we incentivize the women, our graduates, to check in with us. We pay them $50 at 6 months and 12 months. And then at 18 months, we pay them $75 to check in with us. And at 2 years, we pay $100 just to check in with us. And we intentionally made it a dollar amount that would be motivating, right? Like if I leave the Bean Project, I'm going to check in for that $50. You can bet. But the important thing is that what that does is it allows us to reconnect with them and make sure that the services we provided and the things we taught were effective and really do give her the skills and as I mentioned, the toolbox to not just get the job, but to keep the job over the long term. And then if she's kept the job over the long term, we know she hasn't gone back to prison.
There you go, breaking those all those business model rules that are selfish. This is such an unselfish way of running a business that it should be a model for. I would like to see a men's bean project that someday started to help those individuals also. So, but thank God you're doing this. Are there any other benefits that I haven't asked you about? I know, people get concerned about things like are they getting coached well? Are they getting, help finding daycare centers and that sort of thing?
Well, one of the things we haven't talked about yet is how we deliver our services. So we do have staff on site who work with the women, and we also have a cadre of Masters of Social Work interns who help us with case management. So every woman has someone assigned to her who helps her navigate all those basic needs things we talked about earlier, helps her find housing, helps her find the childcare. Potentially also helps her get signed up for the child care assistance program because that's how she will get subsidy for her child care. So she has somebody who's working with her one-on-one to make sure that her needs are being met because we know that if those needs aren't met, they're going to get in the way of her being able to keep a job, not just a job with us, but a job into the future. And then every woman is also assigned a job coach when she gets a couple months into the program. And that job coach, interestingly, is a volunteer from the community. And that volunteer commits to meeting with her once a week for an hour for about 6 or 8 months. And so it's a pretty huge volunteer commitment. And what the job coaches tell us is it's the most meaningful volunteer work they've ever done because they actually get to meet sit with someone and really get to know them one-on-one. And during that time, when they're working together, they're working on how to prepare for the next job. And so we're working on the basic needs and we're working on how to prepare for the next job with a lot more help than just a staff of about 14, which is what we are right now, could do alone.
Wow, that's beautiful. So you do have volunteers that have specific job skills that can help these folks and people who know how to convey that information and teach it. You're
We
breaking
do.
more rules here.
Well, we
I'm
also use this
loving
tool
it.
called we use this tool called Get a Job Kit. And we purchased that from another social enterprise out of California. And what's great about it is then the job coach has a framework for helping her prepare her resume and cover letter and all of those things. But then every woman has her little, and it's shaped like a almost like a little briefcase. So she has her little tool kit that she puts into her toolbox, you know, that is about getting a job. So what we're really trying to do, because if you think about it, you know, we hire roughly right now about 60 women a year. And we need to make sure, and we hire them in cohorts. So this year we hired four different times. Mm-hmm. But we need to make sure whatever we're doing is replicable. And the challenge when you have, say, a job coach coming in and working with an individual, what can be challenging is that that's not a replicable relationship. So we try to put as much framework around everything that we do as possible so that we can replicate it over and over again. And then we are a continuous improvement and continuous feedback organization. So we're always asking for feedback and input about how did we do? And was this class relevant? And so that we can make adjustments constantly to make sure that we're bringing the right skills at the right time to the women, you know, when they need them.
Well, I can understand that you could afford this program as employees on the production line, but there's so much more that you're offering there. Can our listeners help in some way, shape, or form, either in the area of volunteering or the area of money, just to help? Because I would assume that your expenses for these people are way beyond what anybody in a normal manufacturing environment would be able to pay.
Yes, you're right. You're exactly right. And as we all know, minimum wage has increased pretty dramatically over the last several years. In Denver, in 2023, minimum wage is $17.29 an hour, and that will go to $18.29 an hour in 2024. And that's great from the standpoint of someone who's earning that that money, because that is still is well short of self-sufficiency wage for a family in the Denver area. That said, from a business standpoint, that means that minimum wage has more than doubled in the last 6 years. And so that's and it presents an interesting challenge in terms of operating a business. You know, one of the many challenges of operating a business like we do, because we're inherently inefficient. As I mentioned before, we hire people we don't know going to come to work every day. We help them become great employees, and then we do it all over again. And so as a result, we do fundraise. So we have donors from the community who contribute to our program services. So when a woman is in a computer class or she is learning about budgeting her paycheck, she's still being paid, as we talked about. That time is being covered by grants and donations. So if someone wants to support us, what I think is awesome, there are lots of ways to support us as an organization. Someone can buy our product, Skills Create Jobs. They can also give to our organization a donation, or they could give from their 401k. I mean, there are lots of different ways to make a contribution. And what they make possible is programming that really does change women's lives.
Beautiful. So they can buy the food online at the women's, no? Okay.
Just womensbeanproject.com.
Okay, no the. All right, very
correct.
Good. Womensbeanproject.com. And so if somebody goes to a grocery store looking for it, like for Whole Foods or King Supers here in Colorado, what does the brand on the package say?
It's Women's Bean Project.
Yay.
Yay.
All right. Yay.
Yes.
All right. I'm loving it. So people can donate. They could. There's a place to donate on your website. That's correct.
Yes.
Without the. It's womensbeanproject.com.
.com. And, you know, one thing that I think is throws people off a little bit is the .com. We are a nonprofit organization. And we have had a website going back to the mid 90s. And that was at a time, it was, you know, the beginning of the internet. And it was at a time when people would used to say, well, you can't sell things and be a .org. And so we've started as a .com. If you search womensbeanproject.org, you can still get to us. But I think it's really interesting. When you've been around for 34 years, you've got these little snapshots of time where, you know, you're able to look back and say, gosh, our thinking was so antiquated. You know, it used to be you couldn't make a donation online because nonprofits hadn't figured out how to do that.
That's interesting. Wow. Very good. Anything else you would like to say to our audience before we wrap up here? Any words of wisdom you would like to have for our audience?
I really think that the thing I'd like to leave people with is just this idea that when you change a woman's life, you change her family's life. And that's really why we do this work and why I hope people would support the work that we do, because it is about the individual, and really even more so, it's about her children and the rest of her family. And I can tell you that it has an intergenerational impact. And so that's the reason to do it, right? I think when we make a commitment to live in a community, we're also making a commitment to help make that community better. And there is no better way than investing in women to be able to do that.
Well, I love your business model. It works. You are making a change in the world that is a ripple effect that you will probably never, ever, ever know the full impact of what you're doing there. Just know that you are changing the world for the better, one smile at a time, one family at a time, one individual at a time. And you're making that ripple effect change. And we cannot thank you enough for that. It's beautiful.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. So thank you so much for being here with us. And I just hope everybody goes out and buys some beans and support what you're doing there. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Okay. Thank you so much. And for the rest of you, tune in again next week for another episode of the Harmony Goal Podcast. Once again, our whole idea is to shine that spotlight on people like Tamara here in the Women's Bean Project. And just they're doing such wonderful work. And you can go to our website and you could subscribe. And you could also donate to us, keep us on the air if you'd like to do that. So in the meantime, have a wonderful week and go make somebody smile today. That changes the world.
Thank you so much for listening to the Harmony Goal Podcast. To learn more ways in which people are creating harmony in the world, simply subscribe to this podcast. See our mission at theharmonygoal.com. And remember, we are all empowered to create more harmony in the world, one smile at a time.